All right, another midweek edition of the Dunktown Basketball Podcast. One of my favorite podcasters, finally have him on as a guest. Waz, are we allowed to call you a podcaster? Is that
or are you a podcast guest? I think at this point, yeah, it's safe to call me that at this point.
Yeah, I realize that like you don't really need to do these long intros of podcast guests because like, you know, people can just read in the description who it is. Yeah. Like it's not like I don't need to do some long like 1 minute introduction and you know everyone knows you from the True Hoop Pod. See, I guess I kind of just did the intro there anyway. Right. Yeah, so we got a lot to talk about here. Yeah. I came up with a few topics that we just wanted to hit on, just go around randomly on and see whether you could be entertaining talking more than 1/6 of the time like you do on the True Hoop Pod.
Let's see what we got here.
So the number one thing I wanted to get your take on is some of these new CBA provisions. The one that really sticks out to me is we see again there are more rules for teams to keep players that they drafted even now into a third contract, give them even more of an advantage. And do you think that just is that like something that the league should be shooting for, where it's a good thing that we're going to be kind of locking these players in to one team? On the one hand, there's the competitive balance issues that small market owners squawk about. On the other hand, it's like, hey, you know, you had 8 years, 9 years here with guys.
Yeah, and I want to say first and foremost, in the interest of full disclosure, I'm a union guy. I used to work in a union for several years. So I view a lot of these labor and management issues through the prism of a labor guy, right? So just the idea that we have a draft, right? You pick these guys, they have no say in where they go. You get to draft them. They're drafted into a salary pay structure. It doesn't matter how well or how terrible they are. They get drafted into a locked in pay structure. Then after that, when they finally like got to prove themselves, you have this mechanism called restricted free agency where they can go out and get something that they're worth, but you have the ability to retain them. And again, like you said, you're keeping guys for 7, 8, 9 years in the case of a guy like Kevin Durant. So just first and foremost, I just reject the idea outright that these teams deserve the right to keep their superstar, right? That it's more important that, you know, a guy doesn't have the agency to move wherever the hell he pleases than it is for a team that's, you know, especially with OKC. Because you hear this a lot with OKC. Oh, they got screwed. Oh, they got screwed. No, no, no. Oh, they got screwed over.
They had plenty of chance. Like, I mean, I have no sympathy for them in particular.
I mean, they had the first, you drafted, and this is my thing, you drafted a generational talent. Not by virtue of anything that you did that was smart, that was hyper competent. You just drafted a guy because you happened to be terrible 1 year. And you happened to...
Westbrook, they deserve credit for. Ibaka, they deserve credit for.
Sure, absolutely.
Harden probably wasn't the consensus. Like, those three guys, like, I thought Sam Presti was doing a great job up until 2011, and then, you know, he decided he had to trade James Harden. And it was
right, but that's not even what I mean. It's just this idea that you deserve, like, what did you do to deserve him? Like, you did nothing to deserve him for 9 years. And my main thing is that while Kevin Durant was a player for you, he did nothing but outperform the money that he was paid. So it's like, now as a reward to myself, I want to move cities. I want to change my life. I want to play with Steph Curry. I don't understand why that's so bad. Why the Thunder somehow deserve to have KD for 14 years rather than 9 that's already baked into the system. That's
I mean, the counter argument to that, though, and I'm probably more inclined towards your view of things, as you could tell the way I asked the question, but the counter argument to that is, hey, you could still leave OKC and make the exact same amount of money you would have been making with the Warriors or anywhere else, but now it's just you have the opportunity to stay there for even more money. Like, it's still, like, you're just increasing the players off the line to make more.
But Nate, see, but part of that is baked into that is you're conceding the fact that there's a hypothetical situation in which I'm worth that money that you've made the system so that I can't get it, right? You're acknowledging that, you know, this money that we'd be willing to pay you to stay is what you're worth. So you're acknowledging that by putting it in there. So the fact that on the back end you say, well, if you leave, you don't deserve it. It's like they're talking out of both sides of their mouths, the owner. It's always something. And the part of it that I just find laughable is that a lot of it is just so short-sighted. They're never visionary in any of these decisions, right? And I actually happen to do a True Hoop Pod with our friends Brian Windhorst, Tom Haberstroh, and Tim McMahon. And this came up, and for me, when I think about like max contract and, you know, retaining players and all that, I think of a guy like Kyrie Irving. And I'm like, all right, it's cool when you pay Steph Curry $200 million. It's cool when KD gets $200 million. Just because you have the ability to pay Kyrie Irving $200 million, like, that's, it's going to eventually happen, and then the owners are going to start crying about that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's, there are going to be some terrible contracts as a result of this rule. Because, I mean, if you're the earliest, really, you're going to be eligible for that, even if you got drafted at 19, is really going to be you have been in the league for 8 years. So you're going to be 27, 28. Right. And then if all you needed was just to be, you know, third team All NBA the year before.
That's my point. The third team All NBA point.
Yeah. But I mean, again, like to me, I think you should make the 35% max available to anyone who they want to give it to once you come off of your rookie contract. Now, that would make things really difficult in negotiations too and lead to some bad contracts. But that's when players are their best. They should be getting paid the most at that time, like line up salary and performance more.
And for me, it's that once you've decided that you're going to cap salaries, there will be no system in which you're not going to pay LeBron James the same amount of money as a guy who just completely does not deserve to be paid. So, like just understanding that this is baked in the system, that there will only be one LeBron, one Steph, one KD, one Anthony Davis. Now, there's going to be a whole slew of players who are going to qualify who just aren't worth as much. And then when
what about like the freak injuries, whoever, like, stuff like that. Whoever the third team All-NBA center is every year.
I mean, come on. You know, like, and I love DeAndre Jordan, like, but is he, in any scenario, will he ever be worth as much money as Kevin Durant?
Yeah. Well, so there's two things that you talked about there. And one is that I wanted to hit on is just this idea of you talked about you don't really like the draft, right? And the draft is, you can make the argument that, yeah, that it's unfair, but you can also make the argument that the draft really leads to more money being made throughout the entire league and the players getting more money because it allows, I mean, like New York, LA, Chicago, like those teams are going to make a ton of money regardless. But you have teams like Oklahoma City, if the system were set up where there was no cap and, you know, they're just like one of these like crappy Premier League teams, Oklahoma City doesn't make any money.
Yeah, I don't want to say no cap. I actually like the Amin's idea, which is everybody has the same amount of money to spend on rookies, but rookies get to choose, right? Like you make it so that, all right, rookies, you only got, say $6 million. You can spend that as many rookies as you want, but the rookies get to choose, you know? But again, I'm just saying, under the system that we have, you already have a bunch of built-in advantages.
Yeah, sure. You know? And I think that was plenty sufficient, especially because this was just a lucky thing where he could go to a place where he had a better chance to win because of this crazy cap spike that we're not going to see again. And by the way, the interesting thing is I haven't heard anything that they're actually going to have cap smoothing to prevent that again if it ever happened. It probably won't, but we'll see. So the next thing, this is an interesting one that I haven't heard anyone talk about yet, and because you have this labor background, I'm interested to hear your thoughts. Who do you think won the CBA negotiation based on everything that we've heard so far?
Chris Paul. I don't think, you know, in the aggregate, to me, it's always going to be the owners, because again, I'm of the mind, you know, when people say Mike Conley doesn't deserve the money that he's going to make off of his basketball talents this year, I'm like, so do you think James Dolan does? Like, on what planet is he actually earning the amount of income that he's going to make from the New York Knicks this year, right? So I'm always of the mind that the owners win. You know, when they gave back all of that money, and we don't need to get into the their bookkeeping practices, right? Like, this, you can't tell me you're not making any money, right? Like, it's hard. Like,
yeah, that was, even in 2011, that was a specious
claim. It was BS. So, you know, the fact that they got it from 57 to 51, I'm always going to think the owners win in these negotiations. But I think this one, I think cooler heads were able to prevail because the amount of money that has been infused in this for everybody involved, it's enough that everybody could be like, you know what? I'm kind of good with where I'm at right now. And the owners could be like, we don't need to come for 54, 55, 56. You know, we're kind of good with the amount of just pure cash that we've been able to get. And the players are like, we're still upset about the money, the percentages that we lost. But again, because of this influx of cash, and if they're looking at each other as partners and seeing themselves as both being responsible for growing this money together, then they could be a lot happier about splitting up this new money. So, you know, in the aggregate, again, I'm always going to think the owners come out on top, but the players didn't, they didn't, you know, acquit themselves as horribly as they did the last go around.
Well, so if the owners don't provide anything, then why couldn't the players
at all?
Yeah. I mean, because like when they, and I, again, I generally agree with you. I'm being a little devil's advocate here, but if the owners don't provide anything, then the players could have just formed their own league during the last lockout and cut the owners out. But obviously, you know, that wasn't really feasible.
Yeah. But the, see, the thing is, the cartel already exists, right?
Yeah.
It's like they would have had to had the foresight of saying, how do we figure out how to create our own cartel rather than how do we figure out how to beat this one right here? The owners just have the built-in advantages of just, you know, institutional knowledge. I don't think the players collectively have that sort of know-how. I don't know what kind of people are available out there to provide the same institutional knowledge of running.
Yeah, and they can't all get on the same page either. Like they can't work together well enough to do something like
right.
that. And they can't play in the arenas either that are being used already. Like, I mean, it's definitely a lot of it is just simply these sunk costs being locked into the system that you have to create a whole new one is just not worth
it. And just think about it organizationally. You think about an organization like, say, Sacramento, who has all of these freaking owners, and an organization who just has one, right? It's just so much easier to organize yourself and, you know, have a vision when it's just, you know, there's 30 owners and then there's all these hundreds of players. And granted, if they pool their resources together, they could just cut these dudes out. But it's a lot harder to organize yourself in that way. So I don't think it's really, it would take a visionary player, you know, to be able to execute something like that. I don't know that player actually exists yet.
Yeah, I think actually going back to the original question, I would give the players a slight win just based on, you know, this, I think this CBA is a little bit better for players than the last one was. They're getting these extra benefits for retired players. That's something that's coming out of this whole thing. And then expanding the definition of BRI, I think they won that one too. You know, that's going to be, that might, looks like based on the increased cap amounts that maybe that could be up to like a 5% increase in the pie or so based on what it was before. So while the technical, you know, the owners are kind of able to save face in a way, it's still the percentage of BRI that the players are getting is the same. It's a larger pie and they're able to get their paws into more stuff. But the owners are willing to do that because, hey, you know what? Like these franchises are selling for 3 times what they were prior to the 2011 lockout.
And
you know what? I think also maybe another reason why they gave the players back this money in a way that like is kind of more off the books, isn't as obvious, is because you don't want, when you go to sell your franchise, you don't want, oh, we got to give the players how much percentage of revenue? Right. Now it's like, oh, we're paying the same amount as we were before, so like these franchise values should stay aside, even though in reality you have to give the players a little.
Right. They don't want to publicize their losses, which, you know, good for them.
Yeah, I mean, not like the owners got their ass kicked or anything, but a slight.
No, and it's not possible for them to get their asses kicked, you know?
No, it's not true.
The way the system is set up, it's not possible for them to get killed because, again, like, I'm a billionaire. You know, we're going to play big bank, take little bank. Like, I can afford to sit here and take losses, loss after loss after loss after loss after loss. Whereas you know, the $3 million player, and I understand to a lot of the people at home, they don't think of these guys as laborers. Again, they're not in some cornfield, you know, chopping down bales of corn. I get that. But they are laborers, right? And their adversaries and management are way richer by like hundreds of fold, okay? So the way it functions is essentially the same. So they can't afford to take these losses when they got mortgages and things of this nature, you know, tuitions and all of this stuff to worry about. So these negotiations are always more going to be more pressing for the players than they are for the owners.
Well,
and
in some ways too, you know,
if
you
primary businesses.
Yeah, if you're going on strike at like a GM auto plant or something, yeah, that's a good job. You could go work at like the local like Kmart or something to just kind of it's not that much of a loss, right? Like for players, there's nowhere else really that you can go to make as much unless you want to say you're up, which most players don't really want to do. They're making so much that whatever gains you're going to get as a result of the CBA, if you're going to strike, which they can't even really do, or just, you know, hold the line during, you lost, you know, 1/8 if you're lucky, if you played 8 years of your revenue. And so now you're not going to make that back because you got some slight wins in the system.
Right. And also, right, too, again, to talk, oh, yeah. Oh, sorry, but you know, if you're an owner, like, especially with with a lot of the new owners, their primary business, their primary money makers are not their NBA franchises. So again, it's like, you know, my second job is like, all right, cool. That's not how I butter my bread. So it's all right. We can wait this out.
All right, we'll be right back with Waz momentarily. But first, this from Capital One. Capital One knows you've got questions about your credit. You may be asking, who's really in charge of my credit score? Or how does my credit actually work? That's why Capital One created the CreditWise app, so you can check your credit score anytime you want right in the app. And it's free to everyone, Capital One customer or not. In fact, millions of CreditWise users improved their score by 20 points more, so download the app free today. Availability depends on presence of credit history from TransUnion. CreditWise is offered by Capital One Bank USA NA.
All right, you want to talk about some like actual on-court basketball now?
Yes, let's do it.
What have you really liked watching so far this year, just from an aesthetic standpoint? Maybe something that you didn't think you would coming in.
And you know, I thought long and hard about this, but the cliche obvious answers, and I love these two guys together, is KP and Giannis. It's Porzingis and Giannis. And, you know, a lot of times when I'm watching these games, I watch it from this perspective of somebody who used to play. Granted, it was just high school. But, you know, when I watch these guys, especially a guy like KP, and he's so big, right? But so much of the big man stuff that, and you know, because you're a big man, Nate, like that people get people are critical of big men for, like, the little things like passing and catching, right? Where KP has the softest hands, he catches everything. And he knows how to make a proper bounce pass. Like, these things, like, the people watch it seems so easy at home, but for a guy that size to be able to just make it look so effortless and easy. And then that's not just the stuff he's implementing with his handle. He's doing pull-up jumpers off of jab steps and all of this stuff. I'm watching
the game. I think that's overrated. Like, his whole handle, his ability to go one-on-one, like, I think
he's not creating as much space as he can with the handle. But the point of it for me is that it's there. You know, it's something that he can build upon.
I mean, it works if he's being guarded by a traditional center. Like, if he's got, like, right. You know, he's not,
if he's
like
got Giannis on him, it's not going to work. No. It's not going to work. But again, like, if a traditional center is closing out on you at three, and he can make two dribbles and shoot a freaking layup at the hoop, like, that's just stuff that dudes aren't doing at 7'3". You know, like, the type of stuff, and again, he hasn't mastered a lot of this, but a lot of it for me is just watching these small parts of his game take shape, and the potential for him to actually, you know, eventually one day master it is cool. And I watch him in pick and roll with Derrick Rose. His timing is always really freaking good, especially for a second year guy. I feel like a lot of people don't understand, you know, a lot of it isn't just setting a great screen. It's knowing where to move, when to move, how to move. It's these subtle little things. And, you know, you take example like a guy like Amari Stoudemire, right? Like, in his prime, like, when you watched him on pick and roll, like, his timing was just insane, you know? And I think Kristaps is getting better at that. Obviously, he's, you know, he's shooting the hell out of the ball. His defense and his rebounding for me has been the most disappointing parts of his game. But, you know, I just like watching his game, because so many stuff that big men traditionally just can't do, it just comes so naturally and easy to him. And obviously, Giannis is just cool to watch him put together. And again, this is a guy who can't shoot functionally right now. And he's able to be so effective in everything else, you know. Through 2 years ago, when we were talking about the guy, it's like, oh, he has the potential to do all of this stuff. And it's like, you see a guy who's 7 foot, who's a killer in transition. You know, when he gets around,
he wasn't even the best player on the Bucks last year, right? Like, and now he's a top 15 player.
I mean, it's crazy to watch. And, you know, I remember when Jason Kidd started doing the point Giannis experiment, right? And people were like, oh, what is this? And I actually really liked it, because it's knowledge that he's going to be able to retain. It's not that he's going to play point guard. You're putting him in these, you know, situationally, he's going to be able to recognize these things going forward in his career, and they're going to become weapons, whether he's a point guard or not. So his floor game is improving, all of that. It's just incredible to watch him put it all together. So I put those two young dudes in, you know, the same category. And besides that, and I've actually contacted you about this before, I love watching the Utah Jazz. Jazz. I just feel like they have so many players there that I love their depth. And I think, you know, they don't have a guy that is, you know, LeBron, Kevin Durant level. But they don't, like, in their main five, they don't have any guys who you can just completely just disregard. And they play hard as hell.
Gobert, he and Giannis are probably the two favorites for, like, the most improved. Gobert has been
you can't ignore him anymore. He will straight up punish you. Like, he is somebody that you have to deal with on a night-in-night basis. I have a weird fascination with Rodney Hood. I don't know. I just like these dudes that can do a bunch of things on the court. Like, this guy spots up, he pulls up, you know, he can play make. You know what I'm saying? He's a big shot maker. And, you know, I'm not one of these clutch gene guys, but it seems like every time down the stretch of games, this guy's making a big bucket for those dudes. So I'm a big
I agree with you. I like watching them if George Hill is healthy. Like, if I have to watch or Sheldon Mack,
God. And again, you know,
Mack's getting a lot out of his talent. I don't want to kill him. He's like a competent backup point guard.
When they're playing a good team, his deficiencies become magnified. It's like your point guard just has to be better than that. He just has to be, or else you're going to get killed, you know? And a lot of it is like, why am I letting that dude initiate offense if I got Hayward and Rodney Hood? I don't know. Whatever. I don't want to kill Sheldon Mack because that's our boy, Zach Harper. This is one of his favorites, and he takes it personal when you talk about Sheldon Mack.
My answer to this question was going to be just watching the Bucks in general, because I love Jabari too. Like, that guy.
I know like last year you were really big on him, and I was like, I don't know what Nate's seeing there. But this season, you know, when you watch him at the end of that Cavs game, which they ended up losing, but he just completely bullied Tristan Thompson. Just completely just backed him down, a bunch of hard dribbles, put his ass in him, and just backed him up and drew the foul. I'm like, that is crazy. There's probably like six centers in the league who could do that to Tristan Thompson.
Yeah, he's enormous. The crossovers, like the dribble moves he has, like the speed of his handle. I mean, I don't think there's ever been somebody. I mean, even LeBron, he didn't have just like those type of handles where he was just like crossing dudes over the way, even in his prime, the way Jabari does.
He wasn't that shifty. Jabari's change of direction is just, man, for his size and his strength, it's been really cool to watch. Yeah, I'm into the Bucks. And lastly, James Harden. James Harden has just been, you know, I wasn't sure how good the Rockets would be coming into the season.
So you like watching Harden?
I like watching Harden a lot. And a lot of it is, again, you know, I related back to my own game. I couldn't shoot at all. My specialty was basically getting to the rim. So guys who get to the rim at will, I always gravitate toward, you know. And James Harden's ability to get to the rim, but it's not just that. It's like, when I get to the rim, I'm making that perfect pass. I'm, you know, or I'm getting a great layup, or I'm drawing a foul. It's like, he's seeing the game at a level that I don't think the average person understands, because these decisions have to get made in a split second. You know, whether he's going to throw a lob or he's going to, you know, dart a pass to Ariza in the corner. Like, these decisions have to happen so fast. And a lot of times, he's just waiting for his defender to get positioned just like that. He sees it, and boom, he's gone. He's doing it. So, I like Harden.
So, the bullshit foul drawing, though, that doesn't bother you?
That doesn't bother me, because, you know, part of it is like, that's a skill. You know what I'm saying? Like, how about this? Don't foul him. Make him shoot it. You know what I'm saying?
It's a skill. Yeah, I mean, it's a skill that I then am going to fast forward for the next minute when I'm rewatching the game, because he just shot two free throws.
Yeah, like, you do. And I hate the fast forward function on League Pass for, you know, the internet browser. It's kind of awful. So I understand. I understand your pain.
You should go for try and get like a Roku or an Apple TV or something like that. Like, the fast forward works much better on that.
Okay.
If you're rewatching a game, I think it's actually.
Yeah, I tend to just watch it on my laptop.
Oh yeah.
And it's just sometimes you skip over too far. It's just like, what are we doing?
Oh, yeah. No, that's, I mean, it's not.
Because they don't have the 15-second forward or 30-second forward button. It's just a backward button.
Yeah, like Apple TV or like probably Roku or any of those. Like, if you just hook that up to
your TV. With the remote, yeah.
Yeah, like that actually works.
Mm. But yeah, that's it. The Jazz, Harden, and the two young Bucks.
What about the other side of the coin? Who are you, like, we'll throw Brooklyn out of this because they're obviously like the number one in this category. Just like teams that you you're just like, all right, I have no interest in, like, from an aesthetic.
The Dallas Maverick is just, you know, like, they don't even have, it's just a bunch of disparate parts. It's old guys, so there's no young guys that you're checking for to see what new developments they've added to their game or anything like that. It's a bunch of injured dudes. Dirk hasn't been, it's just like, and you know, I got a lot of respect for Carlisle and what he does, but it's just, there's just no interest in watching those. So that's always a hard pass for me.
Dirk is fun to watch, but like watching him on defense is kind of rough. He's finally back now a little bit. I mean, seeing what Barnes was doing, like he's just has been effective, but just like, all right, we're going to ISO him all the time. That's not very exciting ball either.
Yeah. And my second, I would say the Orlando Magic, another hard pass for me, like night after night league pass wise. Cause again, they're just a bunch of ill fitting parts, terrible offense. And it's not even just that the parts are ill fitting. Sometimes they're playing their players out of position. You know, they're playing a guy like Aaron Gordon.
I think you mean all of the time. They're playing their players out of position.
Yeah, fair. Like, it's just, I don't know. There's nothing aesthetically pleasing about anything that they do. You know, a lot of times I like watching a really dominant defensive team, but they're not even that. I thought they would be so much better defensively than they have been this season, but for whatever reason, they haven't been able to, you know, reach that level. But, you know, but they're a hard pass for me, night after night.
Well, and especially teams that, although Aaron Gordon did have 30 last night, I haven't watched that yet, but teams that you feel like are just wasting the talent of young players, which we felt like with playing Aaron Gordon at the three this whole time.
Yeah, and it's not one of those things like with Point Giannis where the skeleton for these abilities was already there, you know, and you're kind of ratcheting up the responsibility for something that he already had a shell of an ability to do. Aaron Gordon has never shown an ability to initiate pick and roll, right? Like, he's never shown an ability to be a great shooter. I don't know why, like, why would we try to put that into his game? He seems like,
I mean, I don't mind it if you're doing a development season. I don't mind that if we're going to try and do this, but like, they're trying to win this theoretically. Like, all their other moves were based around that. So now you're going to also like, hey, we're going to develop this guy who's never done this before in this role.
Yeah, it's just weird. And again, and to me, he just seems like the prototypical four in that, you know, I can guard most four mans, and if I need to switch out on perimeter dudes at the end of the shot clock, I can do that. He's athletic enough to maybe hopefully someday become a great role man, provide some vertical spacing. He just seemed like a natural four to me in 2016 NBA. The three is just like, if you don't have the ball handling ability, you can't shoot. You're not a playmaker naturally. I don't know what we're doing with you at the three.
Phoenix is the one for me that I'm kind of just run out of gas on at this point, because they, in theory, have some intriguing young talent, but, you know, just what they have, like, one of the lowest assist rates in NBA history now. They're playing all these young guys who are dumb, who are like kind of screwing things up a little, like Marquise Chris starting. He's the worst starter in the NBA probably at this point. Like, Danny and I were talking about who would be the worst starter in the NBA. It's probably him. Just in terms of how much he, and like, I would like to see Bender play more, but he's been buried right now. Booker not really developing. Bledsoe, Brandon Knight is probably one of the guys that I find like least interesting in the league. They have no good three men. Maybe actually I haven't watched him as much since CJ Warren's been back. Maybe he'd save them, but
I like CJ Warren.
Oh, and Alex Len might be one of his favorite watches too.
Yeah. You know, I like Devin Booker in the sense that it's cool to watch a young dude play with that kind of poise and pace. Like, his feel for the game is, you know, elite level stuff. But like you said, it's not like he's turning into this, you know, complete playmaker. He's still completely awful at defense. But sometimes it's just cool to watch a young guy who has this innate ability. Who knows? Maybe under the right tutelage, he'd be actually maximizing these abilities. I don't know what they're going to do going forward, but I don't know. I watched them completely just like kick the crap out of the Knicks the one night, and it was kind of fun because they were just running up and down, and maybe that might have been a byproduct of Nick laziness.
But they do at least play fast, right? They at least got that going.
And so it was kind of enjoyable for me, but I can see what you're saying with that.
So on a related point here, at least tangentially, who would you most want and least want to be a fan of for the next 5 years? And we'll leave Brooklyn out of this because I think they're obviously like number one and least fan.
To me, the obvious answer is the Bucks for Mo. Because between Giannis and Jabari, and hopefully, God willing, Chris Middleton comes back, you know, at least, you know, 90% of what he was, if not 100%. They have a core and a nucleus there. And again, what I love about Giannis is what he's doing on defense. You know, to have that kind of piece on your defense, he's providing perimeter, rim protection. It's just, you know, that's exciting to me. Least the team to me, outside of New York, which again, you know, the Dolans have owned the team. Dolan has owned the team for, you know, about 16 years now, and the track record says what it says. It speaks for itself.
Yeah, but they got Porzingis at least, right? Like,
Got Kristaps, right. Outside of New York, for me, it's Sacramento, and that's because just from top to bottom, organizationally, institutionally, culturally, they are a mess. They're a complete mess. Yes, they have DeMarcus Cousins, who, you know, I'm a fan of the guy's game. I don't know if I'm into his, I guess you would say, leadership qualities. I don't know that I would want to anchor. I don't know that I would want to anchor myself to that guy in the future, you know, especially, and again, because like with these dudes who we like to call volatile or mercurial or whatever, eccentric, whatever you want to call these guys, right? You need to have some kind of institutional stability. There needs to be a bulwark against that, right? They don't have that.
Is there anyone else that had like kind of just the, I don't want to say reputation, but just all these incidents who really like shaped up and became like a good citizen and a good really a part of a great winning team? I mean, maybe Zach Randolph is the one that comes to mind.
Yeah, I think he'd be Zebo and probably Charles Barkley.
Charles, everyone liked him though.
Going through guys, right? His teammates actually liked him.
And he was like, they were winning when he was. Yeah, I mean, Charles, I think only had like one losing season in his whole career. Right. You know, like, so
I guess that is a poor example. Yeah, I don't know. Like, you know, it never worked out for Stephon Marbury. I can't really think of a guy who was seen as a... But I don't know that you can... Because the nature of how things get out these days, I don't know that it would have gotten out that a guy was this annoying to be around the way it does now.
As like a star.
Yeah,
I mean, there's not really that much of an analog of a guy who is this good, this many incidents like this, and this many stories around him. And then also just on a losing team for what's, you know, it's been seven seasons now.
Right. And you get a lot of this, oh, well, Sacramento's a crap organization. Okay. Okay. That's fine. I'm just saying they've gone through GMs. They've gone through owners. They've gone through coaches. They've gone through players. Like, it's just been one constant. You can say that, but he's been the constant in all of this turmoil, you know? So, yeah, Sacramento, to me, I don't know how you could see any hope for optimism. They haven't drafted well, aside from Boogie Cousins. It's not like they've made these incredible trades. They're not a free agency destination. Their ownership, it's not even just that Vivek is a lunatic. It's that they have all of these minority owners behind the scenes who have stakes in the team. And so you just have a situation where it's just like, it's just it's a swamp from the top down.
Yeah, they probably also, despite the fact that they hired Ken Cantinella to help out with some analytics, and I think they've been doing, the salary cap, they've been doing a better job since they hired him. I mean, Vlade Divac is clearly the most incompetent GM, both in terms of his record and his background in the league right now. That's another reason for a lack of optimism, shall we say.
Sorry, Kings fans.
And I guess the Magic would probably be the other one, because at least the Kings, I mean, they're going to have space summer. I have to rerun their calculations of exactly what that's going to be with the new rules, but they should have enough to add a piece. They could lose a Rudy Gay, I suppose, and Caspi, like, but they could maybe reconstruct the team a little bit. Maybe they get the eighth seed this year. They get a little bit of more cred, and they can get, you know, if not anywhere close to the top tier free agents, at least they're not scraping the bottom of the barrel. Orlando, I'm not really sure if you can even come up with a way in which they end up really being good. I mean, those are the two that I think kind of, you know, they won't probably have the worst records over the next 5 years, but they probably have the most hopeless situations. And then that's another management front office that there isn't really much reason to believe in.
Yeah, I'd have to agree, because, you know, even they brought in Serge Ibaka, they traded traded away all these assets for him. He's on a one-year deal, so which, you know, presumably would mean that you want to keep the guy going forward. And God only knows how much it's going to cost to do that. They don't have a young player where you can say, man, that's our future all-star right there. The Elfrid Payton thing has been a disaster. Shouts to our buddy Kevin Pelton. He's still on Elfrid Island for some god, some for some ridiculous reason.
Hey, should be better off the bench, but yeah, I mean, I'm still not a believer there. You never know. Yeah. Guys, point guards could get it late, but he's not close, that's sure.
Yeah.
For the best, you mentioned the Bucks. I think those three guys, Middleton, Jabari, and Giannis, I mean, that Jabari-Giannis combo is just so exciting to watch. So there's that. But yeah, in terms of winning, they have all this money tied up at center position, and they don't really have any kind of a solution there. They don't have any kind of flexibility in terms of their cap space now. They don't really have like quality point guard option either. You know, Dellavedova is, I mean, he's been doing what he was brought in to do, but you know, he's Matthew Dellavedova. He's not going to be like a championship quality starting point guard. And again, sure, you know, they've kind of made some bad contractual decisions, some bad trades. So you wonder really about whether they are going to be able to take the next step. They have that awesome three-man core that's making like $25 million right now. If Middleton weren't hurt, they'd probably be on like a 45 win pace. But then the rest of the roster is just, you know, such a really a waste of money when you consider like what they're getting out of it.
Yeah.
And I'm not a huge kid believer either, actually.
I'm not down on, like, I'm not Kurt Rambis down on him, right? You know, I don't think he's the next Popovich, but
he's not terrible, but I think his rotation, the way Jack's guys around,
right,
a little bit,
that's troubling. And you know, if we're being honest here, if we're being real here, you know, no fan base is more to be happier about for the next 5 years, especially, than probably Golden State, right?
Like, yeah, I mean, I think we can leave the Warriors and Cavs.
You know what I'm saying?
That's that's not really funny. I mean, that's just too easy of an answer.
Yeah.
What about Boston?
I don't know. I was one of those people who I just didn't see that, like, until your assets actually manifest themselves into a player, it's hard for me to get excited about Boston, right? Because it's like, yeah, we have Brooklyn's lottery pick. And if, I don't know, maybe this is the pessimist in me. Maybe this is a bias against young players. When I hear lottery pick, I hear Ben McLemore, right? Like,
there's a big difference between a top five pick and a top 10, you know?
You know, so when I hear lottery pick, I'm like, yeah, that sounds so great in the abstract. It's like when people were talking about Jerry and Grant this summer, Knicks asset, Jerry and Grant. Oh, he was a first round pick. I'm like, yeah, that sounds good when you hear first round pick, but when you actually, when you actually have to deal with the reality of who that pick was, who that pick became, it's a little bit harder for me to get excited about pick position and, you know, trade, cap flexibility, trade assets. I don't know. Like, they signed Al Horford. I'm like, I love Al Horford. He's a really good player. Like, he doesn't do anything for this team as far as making them a bigger threat to any, like I wouldn't pick them over the Clippers, the Spurs, the Warriors. I wouldn't even pick, I don't know that I would pick them over a team like Memphis at full strength. You know, like, I don't Boston doesn't get me, none of their players get me excited. So I guess their most exciting feature is their assets. Not that I don't recognize the potential of assets. I'm just somebody who, wake me up when you trade for James Harden, right? Until that happens, your assets are just
or until you draft a Joel Embiid, or you draft a Markel Fultz, or you when we're talking, because those picks, I mean, it's going to be very likely top three again this year, and same thing probably next year. I don't see the Nets really getting much better next year either. Maybe they, it'll be top five. And so, like, with any draft pick, but like, you make a good point there, because when it becomes Jerry and Grant, then it's like, all right, you know, we've lost the upside of this pick. I mean, that's part of what is so good about draft picks, is even that 10% chance that it becomes just like,
is tantalizing,
or even that 30% chance when it's a top five pick that the guy becomes a monster. And so they have three of those picks, really, you know, 30% chance each of them becomes a star, and now you probably have a good chance of adding a star. I also just, the enjoyment of watching good young players develop while they're still actually good, you know, that's something that you could look at. And Isaiah is a really fun player to watch.
That's what
Horford,
Horford
is not fun to watch, but he, I think the idea was that he is just sort of creating a stepping stone to like the next team tier where, all right, you know, we got a legitimate free agent. We've got space for one more, like come and join him. You know, he already came here. It's more of that than this guy is really putting us over the top. I mean, I went back and forth on that contract and I eventually felt it was a decent one in the context of 2016.
Sure. Yeah, it's a decent enough contract. Like I think he's going to be a quality starter going throughout the life of that deal. Do I think he's going to be, you know, one of the best centers in the league for most of that deal? I don't know. Yeah. You know?
No, I mean, he's probably like the 6th, 7th, 8th best center right now. I haven't gone through the ranking. Let me change topics here, though.
Sure.
Steph Curry, kind of an ordinary season for him so far. Certainly not as good as either of the last 2 years. And what do you think of that?
I talked about this with Tom Haberstroh, and this was a few weeks ago, and I told him, I said, the Warriors are leaving points on the board. They're leaving points on the court with the way that they're playing. This idea that we're going to try to turn Steph Curry into this overqualified decoy and John Stockton. Like, it just doesn't make any sense. I feel like Steve Kerr has it in his head that the reason why the offense was humming was this beautiful game stuff. Whereas, like, no, that beautiful game stuff gets to hum because once you make a mistake in the back on a back screen or, you know, on a pick and roll, on any given pick and roll, you're doing that because of the threat of Steph Curry. Once you have decreased Steph Curry's threat level, all that other stuff becomes obsolete. You know, when you're not worried about this guy stepping over half court and popping a three in your eye at any given moment, and a lot of it is just the threat. It's not that he's going to come out and shoot 10 pull-ups a game. It's that he could. And the defense has to be hyper.
Teams are still scared, though. Like, if you watch the way the Cavs defended him, like, the guy guarding Steph just had no help responsibilities. Like the, but, I mean, it could be that maybe he's just not that good anymore. I think it's like part of it is how he's being used. But I mean, you know, he's taking, when he takes those shots off the dribble, he's shooting 30% on those. Maybe he just isn't the same player. He had that knee surgery. Maybe he couldn't work out as much during the offseason. Maybe it's just his head is kind of messed with because they have all these other options now. Like, maybe he's just not as good anymore. Like, could it be just be that?
I think it could be some of that, but it's hard for me to believe that. I don't know. Like, these were hard shots, right? It's not like they've become harder. You know what I'm saying? Like, it's hard for me to believe that he just got worse at it. I don't know. It's like the shots haven't increased in difficulty. The situations are pretty much the same. And the reason why I'm against it as well is because I feel like KD and what he does, it just takes a lot less catering to. You know, he just doesn't need as much to be able to do what he's gonna do. And everybody's seeing it. Like, his usages, his possessions have gone down, his usage has gone down, everything's gone down, but he's maximizing his efficiency, you know. And I think KD is just that, like, I always saw that for KD. And I honestly, you know, me and our buddy Ethan were arguing this over the summer. I said KD's gonna be the best player on this team because he's the best player.
You were right about that. I was on the Steph train too, just because he had this historic season. But, you know, I mean, it's just Steph just isn't as good anymore. If Steph were playing the way he played last year, it still wouldn't be a question, but he hasn't been that guy.
Yeah, I honestly think if we just straight up just ran the offense pretty much exactly like they did last season, but also, you know, Nate, if we're being honest, last season, Kerr was doing a lot of this take Steph off the ball stuff too.
Yeah.
And I didn't like it then either. And a lot of it was like, oh, we need
to... Well, the thing is, it kills bad teams. Like, teams that, like, the, you know, they get these, like, 35 assists in a game against bad teams. They just make some of these bad teams look so stupid sometimes. But against good teams that are going to switch, that are locked in, that know the personnel really well, I think going a little bit more basic at times would really help.
Yes, and you saw that in the playoffs, where even, you know, if people remember last season, Oklahoma City, they weren't some juggernaut defensive team. They were sloppy. They would miscommunicate all the time. The effort level wasn't there. They get to the Western Conference Finals. They're flying around. They're executing every single switch. Steven Adams and Serge Ibaka are chopping their feet at the three-point line against Steph Curry. Like, you see that, like, these little things that you're able to get easy baskets, easy dunks off of miscommunication in your back line. That's out the window when good teams lock in on you. But you know what's not? A damn screen for Steph Curry at the top of the key. All right?
Yeah.
I don't know. For me, I just like to see them do that more.
And I'm not saying junk that that stuff entirely? Because, I mean, you remember it was all that before Kerr got there, and they completely underperformed. Right. And, you know, like Clay, for example, really relies on that type of stuff a lot. Yeah. So I don't think they should junk that, but just, hey, like, let's get Steph Curry going here for a couple of games. Like, let's get him back to me. I mean, another thing, actually, that I noticed, like, if you saw his reaction, he got subbed out of the game, and, like, how he went on the bench, like, he was not happy about that. I mean, I think that just kind of compounded the fact that he was having a terrible game, and, like, you know, he only took 11 shots and all that stuff. But, you know, Sean Livingston's better on defense than him. Like, if you don't want to get subbed out, play better defense. But it's also, I think that was kind of the capper on what's been going on, where, I mean, his ad for Under Armour was, hey, make that old. He is not making that old. Like, he is just confirming everyone who is like, oh, this guy wasn't really that good to begin with. Like, he was way overhyped.
Yeah, I'm not one of those people. I get accused amongst my friends. They call me Waz Curry, my friends. Like, they just call me this. They think I'm this huge apologist, which is like, I don't know. The proof is in the pudding. The guy was freaking amazing. I'm sorry. Like, I can't say that he's not, you know. But I don't know. I don't think that I don't think that the advantage that you gain from bringing Livingston in for one possession against the Cavs in a regular season game or Christmas.
Yeah, the regular season for the argument there. Yeah.
Right. For this other stuff that you're sacrificing for that, as far as confidence and things of that nature. So I don't know. We'll see how this shakes out going forward. Obviously, I'm looking forward to Martin Luther King Day, not just because I'm black.
All right, so let's go for like another 10 minutes or so here. Anything else that you thought? I sent probably like four or five more questions. Which of those do you want to hit on that you feel like you interested you at all?
There's only a couple. One, you wanted to talk about some things that I disagreed on you. First of all, I want to say I'm a big fan of the show, big fan of you and Danny's. I generally just agree with what you guys say because you guys don't do hot takes. It's like, this guy hasn't made this shot in years. He sucks at it. You know, that's generally what you guys do with the show. You know, and you point out improvements that people have made. So it's not like I'm constantly finding stuff like, oh my God, Nate with another hot one. No. But I think we disagree on the process. I think that's what we disagree on. The process and, you know, the merits of doing that, you know, and for me, and again,
when you say the merits, I mean like just whether it's good for the league or whether it was smart for Sam Hinkie to keep his job or whether it was good for the Sixers' ultimate destiny. Like, there's a number of ways to look at that.
Okay. It's I don't care about Hinkie's job security. I don't even care about good for the league is probably where I'm at with this, in the sense that, yes, we understand what the rules are, but there's a spirit of the rule, you know, like there's just something sacrilegious about the idea that you were going to kill yourself to lose. Right. And then the rewards of that are the rights to draft Jahlil Okafor and, you know, and a guy that I like, Nerlens Noel. But like, what are we doing here? You understand what I'm saying? It's just you can do all of that without making it so nakedly blatant. And the rewards are not guaranteed in such a way that it's even worth it to me. You know,
well, I mean, it's all math, right? Like, they got Embiid. Sure. Like, if he hadn't had that approach, they wouldn't have Embiid right now.
I don't know that that's true, though. You know, I think the function of having Embiid is not from what they actually did. It's just luck.
Well, no, because they would have been like, oh, this guy can't play this year. We have to win this year. We can't draft a guy that can't play this year.
Sure, that's fair. That's fair. That's really fair. But, you know, with the same logic, they didn't take Kristaps. They took Okafor because they didn't see Kristaps, you know. And for whatever reason, they were like, oh. And again, it's just, I just don't like the idea.
But nobody else in the league had Kristaps over Okafor, basically. I mean, probably 25 of the 30 GMs would have done the same thing.
Sure, but, you know, not everybody's getting called a genius either, right? You know, like, that's part of the problem. It's like this idea that, you know, losing earns you lottery, earns you high picks. Like, we all know that, but we're taking part in an enterprise called basketball, and a lot of it is an entertainment product. The fact that you would put out a D-League team for 5 years 3 years. Just so you can have the opportunity. So it's
basically 3 years.
Sure. 3 years.
I don't think they're not a D-League team this year. Especially like if Ben Simmons had been healthy all year and what Embiid is doing, like you would be like, oh wow, like this, I can't miss this team. Like when Simmons gets healthy and he's playing with Embiid, you're gonna
We'll see when Simmons comes back. But okay, but what I'm saying is, Nate, like, do you think they're in a better position than Milwaukee? They're not, functionally. They're not in a better position than Minnesota. They're not in a better position than even Utah, I would say, arguably. And like nobody had to subject themselves to this indignity. It's just ugly.
Yeah, they were allowed to be incompetent, right? Like Minnesota hasn't made the playoffs in like 12 years. And Minnesota completely lucked out too with this whole, like, the fact that
the Kevin Love great stuff. Team,
like Minnesota got a lot luckier than Philly did too, because they got Andrew, or they only have Wiggins because Love just happened to want to be traded at a time when the team that got the number one pick also got LeBron James. Like that, there's no way they get anywhere near that amount for Love in a trade. And you know, we can debate Wiggins, but he's part of what it's considered to be so good. And then Milwaukee, like they just got lucky at 15 with Giannis. I mean, that they did well to scout him, but you know, at the same time, like,
that's kind of my point, Nate. It's like, even when you plan for this stuff, it's so luck based, you know, and that's where I'm
and that's what the whole point of the process is, though. You acknowledge that it's luck based and you give yourself the best possible chance.
Yes. You at what cost, though? And like, because look, this is my thing. People poo pooed what Milwaukee used to do, chasing the eighth seed. People poo poo what Charlotte is doing. I'm like, dude, if you're a fan of a team, I'm sorry. Three straight seven seeds versus three straight years of D League basketball. No fan is gonna trade that.
I think you're right that they should, like, if they should have at least gotten like a competent point guard in.
That's what I'm saying. And they should have just tried a little bit. You were gonna lose anyway. That's part of it for me.
And that's why Sam got fired. And I think if he had it to do over, he would have handled the emotional aspects of it a little bit more. Where it's just, and like, for example, I think the biggest thing when the outcry really became crazy was, all right, you know, we drafted him. Embiid, I get that. You know, we traded away Drew Holiday for Nerlens. We drafted two guys in a row who couldn't play the first year. But then when he traded away Carter Williams, even though that was an absolutely brilliant trade, it was like, okay, we had 1 year of this drafting an injured guy. We had another year of this drafting an injured guy. And now we're going to trade away another rookie, like the guy who was the one. Now he was overrated. That was a brilliant trade. But that's when I think the tail really turned against him, as opposed to like if they had not done that trade, and I think they should have done it, or just handled it a little better, or they just signed somebody in free agency who wasn't terrible or whatever. Like it could have been to where you wouldn't be saying this because they would have just won 20 games out of 12.
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I think just part of me is just like being that naked about just wanting to put out the most absolute worst product possible. It just offends my sensibilities as somebody who's a fan of competent basketball, right? Like I understand the idea that you want to give your team as many bites at the apple as possible. You know, the best way to get a KD is to draft a KD. I get all of that stuff conceptually. I just think functionally, you know, when you actually apply it to the real world, you know, and you're losing three games in a row by 50, it's like, this is just bad. You know, so that's just where I stand at it.
They didn't even have any young players who were that sexy either at the time, where you could really be like, all right, you know, I'm watching. And now they do with Embiid, but you weren't tuning in to be like, all right, I can't wait to watch Jahlil Okafor, Nerlens Noel's development tonight. I mean, you need somebody at least to have in their hands and be doing something. But let me ask you this. If you know, back when you were a Knicks fan, you put yourself in shoes, would you rather just that they got like an eight seed for 5 years, or would you rather, or for 10 years every year, or would you rather that they were putrid for 3 years and then built up to being a championship contender over the next seven?
I mean, it's hard because the Knicks never, ever own their draft pick. So, you know, it's like the problem with that is like even the years that they would stink, they didn't own the pick. So it was like it was a double-edged sword of just terribleness, right? Sure, but there's... I don't know. There's just a certain, like, people want to go to these games and watch people play. I think we just underrate. The value in going to a game and watching really good, competent basketball. Like, I just think that's undervalued in a way. I don't know. As far as
the home fan, you want to see like play, and you go to see LeBron. You want the home team to be good enough that LeBron actually has to try.
Right. You know, there's something like you leave the stadium like, wow, that was money well spent. Wow. You know, there's just there's something valuable about that. Maybe I'm a sap. I don't know. You know, it's not even about the idea that you would rebuild, that you would trade away old guys that are making a lot of money. If you could get stuff back for them so that you could rebuild. It's not even that concept. It's, you know, it's the concept that, you know, I have guys on my team who are okay. They're not going to get me to 50 wins. They're not even going to get me to 35 wins. They're okay. They're legitimate NBA players that I'm going to now give them away so that I can bring in a guy who's clearly not an NBA player so that I could guarantee myself a position to maybe get a first pick. And it's like the percentage is like 25 to 33% at the first pick. I'm guaranteeing myself time. It's like, you're already going to get there. You don't need to bastardize the game in the process. I didn't even mean to do that, Nate. Yes, but that's, you know, that's kind of where I stand on. And I did want to ask you one thing. And this is a more nerdier thing. Where do you stand with these all-in-one statistics? Something like win shares or value over replacement or RPM, which I'm not going to lie. I know it's an ESPN product. I hate RPM. Where do you stand with that stuff? Because as somebody who used to be fairly good at math, one of my problems with all-in-one stats is I don't know how they're making them. Right, like I don't know how to judge the value of what's baked into it.
I think the formulas are public on most of them, other than RPM. That's like, you know, the Jeremias Engelman black box. I just think that they're just like part of the toolbox, right? Like, you're not gonna, like, if I was want to say, for example, like a guy has a PER under 10, you better have a damn good argument for why this guy is good,
right?
If he's not bad in the box score sets, like, there, you can count on one hand the number of guys with PERs under 10 who are actually effective NBA players probably in the last couple of years. So you better be like, all right, you know, I watched this dude. And then if you're saying, all right, a stat that's based on the on-off data too, like, that's not going to capture why this guy's good and the box score is not capturing it. Mm. You know, again, it's really difficult for me to say at that point that this guy is good.
Okay. And, you know, for me with RPM specifically on the defensive end, it's just, I don't know how you, like, for instance, you know, and I hate to bring up Ethan's Chris Paul and Steph Curry thing again, but I have to. But, you know, Ethan went on, he wrote a whole piece about how Chris Paul was a better defender than Steph Curry. I mean, excuse me, Steph Curry was a better defender than Chris Paul. And, you know, just on its face, it seemed ridiculous.
I don't think that's
to
what
me.
He said. I think he said this stat may indicate that he's not as bad relative to Paul.
No, but when I talked to Ethan about it, he was clear in what he meant. Like, when I actually talked to him one-on-one, he's like, no, he's better or just as good or something like that. And for me, it's, you know, within your scheme, what you're being asked to do is different from player to player, from team to team. And it's dependent on who you're playing with, you know, how effective you're actually able to execute your scheme. It depends on who's around you. So Chris Paul might be doing a slightly worse job at doing something that's way harder than what Steph Curry's being asked to do. But it won't be reflected within the numbers. But that doesn't mean he's playing better defense. That does, and his RPM will show that, oh, Steph Curry's playing better defense. It's like, well, he's being asked to do something completely different than him.
Well, that's to why me, the solution defense, is, I don't like just it. Don't take it that seriously, right? Like, it's funny because I think almost anybody who's really into advanced stats, even the creators of advanced stats, except for one person who just basically parrots our RPM in certain ESPN 5-on-5s every time he's asked to comment. But other than that, it's... It's other than that, it's like the guys who don't really know that much about advanced stats and aren't into it, they almost take it more seriously than the people who are really into it. They're like, oh, this stat exists, therefore anyone who created this or takes this seriously just believes that this is the be all end all and there's no context for this. It's like, no, it's just part of the puzzle. Like, as long as you take it that way and say, all right, this is like having an understanding of what it's measuring. And I understand the criticism, because at least for RPM, you know, it's a black box, you don't quite understand it perfectly, you know, because I'm not doing a ridge regression. I wouldn't understand it even if it weren't a black box, frankly. But you understand that, all right, it's basically measuring what guys are doing when they're on the floor compared to when they're off. And, you know, it's comparing them in some ways to their backups. So there's a weakness there, especially in a small sample, if their backups really suck, or maybe, you know, if they have really good box score stats, but, you know, that's overwhelming what they might be doing if they just in the pure on off stuff. So you have an understanding maybe of like, all right, here's why this could be wrong. Like, you just have to use all of them. And the idea of, all right, this is an indication that this method of looking at it says this guy is good. All right, now how could that be wrong? Like, what other ways can I confirm that?
Right. Yeah, for me, it's not even about taking the stats serious or not serious. For me,
no, I'm not putting you in that category. I mean, it's the, oh, analytics say, you know, it's those people.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm thinking about it in context of other good stats, right? And why this is a good stat. That's kind of where I'm thinking about it, not the context of what do we need these fancy schmancy stats, which is like basically, yeah, you know, a lot of
it's
times
just you gotta know arithmetic. You gotta know what the weaknesses is, the sure, weaknesses and strengths are of a stat when you use it. And you have to understand that, all right, PER says Enes Kanter, he's eighth in the league in PER right now, or whatever Enes it is Kanter. No, he's not the eighth best player in the league. No one is actually gonna make that argument. But, you know, so you understand that this stat is measuring certain things. It's not just you know, it's all in one is maybe a bit of a misnomer, because you're still something is going to be left out of every statistic.
Right. Well, I guess that, yeah, I guess, yeah, that about does it.
Are we we're gonna play some pickup at Sloan? Are you going this year?
I'm gonna try to. I don't know if I'm gonna be able to free up time, but I'm gonna definitely try to. I had an amazing time last year. That was incredible.
All right. Well, maybe if not, then maybe I'll roll through New York and we could get a pickup game in. Where's your usual run at, if you even have one at this point?
I don't have a run, but I have, you know, a lot of my friends still are active hoopers, so I could easily retain some get some information on that for us, you know. if needed be, yes, I could figure out how to get us in a gym, but me personally, I'm retired from the game.
Well, I mean, we played on the same team last year at Sloan.
That was my first time playing, I think, in over a year. That was my first time.
How come you retired?
It's a lot of things. It's like, one, I don't feel like getting myself worked up, because it's like you play a game and you want to win. And it's like, a lot of times I'm like, do I really want to just go through this ringer, like being pissed off if I do happen to lose? And it's like, do I want to go through that? Then it's like, you know, there's a reason why you asked me where I get my runs at. Like, you have to find a quality run. You know, you don't want to play your bunks with a bunch of dudes who call fouls every time, a bunch of dudes who cry about every call, a bunch of dudes cheating the score, you know, a bunch of dudes who think they're freaking Allen Iverson. Like, you want to find a quality run, and that's, you know, harder and harder to do these days, I'm finding, the older I get. So it's a lot of that. Plus, you know, a couple of my homies have like suffered major injuries playing pickup. Like, one of my homies tore his Achilles, another homie broke his foot. Like, I'm talking about on crutches for months from a pickup basketball game.
Same thing happened. I like it too much. I always miss it. But you're right. Like, if you're in a bad mood and you go and play and you play well and you win some games, you're in a great mood. But if you go there in a bad mood and then like you just suck and you lose and like you're waiting,
your day
games
is
and
ruined.
You come back on,
I'm literally terrible at home hours later thinking about a pass I missed. It's bad. So that's, you know, that's basically my thinking with it, man. And you know, I find other outlets to, you know, get some physical activity in. So I'm not completely just a couch potato yet.
Your local bench press apparatus, perhaps?
Yes, sir. Shouts to 24-Hour Fitness, even though they close at 11 p.m.
24-Hour Fitness is like expensive in York, isn't it? Like, they have like a separate category. Like, I'm a 24-Hour member, and I couldn't go there because it's like ultra, ultra 24-Hour Fitness.
Oh, well, yeah. If you, like, I pay $25 a month to be at my 24-Hour Fitness, but it's just, I can't go to another 24-Hour Fitness. It doesn't,
Yeah,
it's not like like LA Fitness or one of these other gyms where it's like, oh no, if there's an Equinox anywhere, you can just show up. No, for my plan, it's you can just go to your one, you know, home-based 24-hour fitness. I'm sure they have another plan where it's, and you can go to any 24-hour fitness in the world, but you know, it's not like I'm gonna be like, oh, I want to go to Brooklyn to work out to see what it's like. Like, no, I'm gonna stay right to the closest one to where I live. You know.
Yeah. All right, man. Thanks for coming on. This was quite enjoyable as always, and we'll hope we can catch up in person on the East Coast later this year.
Yes, absolutely, man. Thanks for having me, Nate. Again, once again, I love what y'all do. I'm, you know, just so happy to be on.
All right, that's an excellent note to end on. All right, catch you later.
All right.
Thanks again to Capital One's CreditWise app sponsoring us today. Capital One created the CreditWise app so you can check your credit score anytime you want right in the app. It's free to everyone, so download CreditWise today. Availability depends on present credit history of TransUnion. CreditWise is offered by Capital One Bank USA NA.